When is the last time you listened to a podcast about web development, web design, and small business and didn't fall asleep? Yes, we cover web development, web design, and small business, but like actual human beings with personalities. If you're a beginner, we're not going to talk over your head. It's more like asking your buddy for help. We have guests, we have fun, and let me tell you, these two can get off on a tangent. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to HTML All the Things Podcast. This is Matt Lawrence and Mike Curran.
That's it, everybody. We are back. This is the HTML All the Things Podcast. This episode is titled, Is There a Best Way to Make a Website? Now, this episode is inspired. I'll get into the inspiration because there's quite a bit of it, but is inspired by people typing in search queries. So, is there a best way to make a website? Is there a best sort of bicycle to buy? What's the best boat? And I thought to myself, is there a best way to make a website? So we're going to dive into, you know, is there one? What's the answer to that question? And like everything in life, there's sort of a gray area, or not even sort of, there is a gray area, at least in our opinion. And so we're going to discuss that. So if this sounds interesting to you and you want to support the show, you can go check us out on that Patreon, leave a review or rating on your podcast app, join us in our Discord server, or share this with your friends. And remember that if you want to learn with an interactive media player code editor, you want to learn how to code, you can go do that on Scrimba with our affiliate link, which will be in the show description as well as on the show notes at htmlallthethings.com. So let's kick it off with the inspiration section, because I wanted to sort of set the mood, if you will, and sort of figure out, you know, where I'm coming from with this. So I was browsing around on Reddit, specifically the web dev subreddit, and I didn't pull from any specific Reddit post on there at all, but I'm just sort of surfing around looking for some show topics. And I'm realizing that people are asking questions like, you know, hey, I'm back into blogging for the first time. How do I, you know, what's the best way to do that this year? And there's, you know, a bunch of threads like this throughout the years. And people are sort of, you know, maybe they were in the blogging game, or maybe they thought about it, never got into it. And now they're, you know, they're back in some way, and they want to know the best way to do it in 2024, 2023, 2017, whatever they asked. And I thought to myself, I'm like, okay, like, you know, that makes sense. But then there's other ones too, right? So we're in web development. So people are asking, what's the best stack? What's the best this? What's the best WordPress plugin? How do I, you know, should I be using WordPress multi-site? Should I not be using WordPress multi-site? Should I be getting bulk licenses? And a lot of these can sort of be boiled down into a bunch of questions that I have listed here, which is, you know, what's the best stack? What's the best way to enhance my site's performance? What's the best no-code tool? What's the best WordPress plugin? For enter in, you know, reason here, like RSS feeds or podcasts or whatever. What's the best podcast plugin, for example, for WordPress? What's the best WordPress theme? And sometimes even this has some nuance, like what's the best WordPress theme for Elementor, for Visual Composer, for this, for that? Enter in, again, situation here. And finally, what's the best IDE for those of you that do some custom coding out there? Now, in affiliate marketing sort of SEO terms, we use the term best, or rather the word best, I guess, when writing content that is centered around the user looking to buy something. So for example, you might write your article about gaming headsets that has a bunch of affiliate links to gaming headsets as, what's the best gaming headset? And this obviously applies to multiple other things. What's the best, enter in something here. What's the best bank account? And maybe there's some sort of affiliate link there. This is the best savings account. What's the best bicycle? And you have affiliate links to Amazon bicycles. And again, the list goes on. It's trying to appeal to the people whose search query is an intent to buy. They're looking for the best bicycle. They're looking for the best gaming headset, and they're looking for the best savings account in those three queries. So then this sort of stems the question, which is the question that makes up the majority of this episode, which is there a best way to make a website? Now, my answer to this is subjective. It's obviously my opinion as well. But in its simplest terms, according to me, the answer is no. And so we can just end the episode here and, you know, but no, of course not. We want to talk about this gray area. Why is the answer subjective, and why is it no?
Yeah, I want to kind of dive into this, because this is a really tough one for people getting into web development or trying to scale up. And like Matt said, when you go to something like Google and you type in best stack, or you type in anything at this point, you're going to be served articles that are meant to get you to click on them and sell you something. So a lot of times it's going to be very biased what you're going to get as the best stack. So like you'll get an article from the Vercel team that Next.js is the best stack, or you'll get an article from the, I don't know, WordPress team that WordPress is the best. You know what I mean? Like everyone's trying to compete for that keyword. So it's impossible to make your decision based on like a Google search anymore. And that goes for almost anything, not just web development. But with web development in particular, because there's so many options at this point, and a lot of them are so abstract and so different in their implementations, it can get even worse. And so you can go down several rabbit holes that could be like learning a whole stack that eventually is, at the end of the day, not even compatible with what you're trying to make. That there's this like idea now that you almost need to be like an architect to be able to choose the tools for every problem. So when you're given a problem to solve or a website to build, it's the same thing, right? Like a website, you're building a website to solve a problem. The problem is, for instance, I don't have an online presence, or my online presence is outdated. That could be a problem that you're trying to solve. Or it could be like, hey, I need analytics on this internal part of my business that I just can't get from a regular, you know, dashboard. So I need you to build me a dashboard that connects to the internal part of my business. You're solving a problem there. That's a website or a web app, but it's not a direct, like, you know, out of the box solution that you can find. So in those situations, when you're finding a developer, you're not finding a developer that's just like, I'm good at this one thing and I can do it over and over again. You're finding a developer that can adapt a lot of times and build you the right solution with the right set of tools. And those tools are so crazily varying at this point. You know, no code, Matt mentioned WordPress, like Webflow, you know, Wix, Squarespace, all of them have their own fit, right? Like none of those tools are bad. They all fit into the marketplace, and that's why they're so successful. And that's why they're all over the place. And they all fit for different reasons. So this is where it becomes super complicated. And we're going to talk about like the complexity of choosing the right choice. And then even the right choice being a very big asterisk. Because again, a lot of these tools can do each other's jobs. But like some of them are better than others. And some of them are faster. Some of them are cheaper. Some of them are like, you know, more performant and easier to build. Like there's just a million different reasons to choose one over the other. And you can have that fight forever. But at the end of the day, if you don't choose something that does the job and does it accordingly, you'll never get to the solution, because you can be stuck in this analysis paralysis of like, I have a million choices. How am I supposed to host? How am I supposed to brand? Like all these things. And you're never going to get down that path. So at some point, you're going to need to make a choice. And at that point, you're also going to need to be okay with making not the most efficient choice sometimes too, because you can't be expected to go down every single rabbit hole of every single tech stack. It's a crazy perspective right now as a solutions engineer or a solutions architect, trying to figure out which stacks you want to support and making sure that you are able to provide the best technical solutions for your clients, as well as the best like business solutions, I guess is kind of like the balance, right? Like it's just really difficult. And the plethora of choice and the analytic, the affiliate marketing SEO stuff is making it even harder. Matt went to Reddit. That's a good way to do it. But even there, it's like there's a lot of bias there. Reddit especially the web dev community on there has a lot of kind of biases of their own, and they're very like strong on them. So like if you put something that's not in their quote unquote meta for technology, they'll like shit on you for whatever reason. And so like fringe tech that could be good for you might not be propagated on Reddit. Like it's all fucking, like it's all crazy. It's all a very difficult conversation. And I think we're going to get into it now. And I'm excited to talk about this because I've been kind of going down all these rabbit holes for different tech stacks. But just know that if you're struggling through choosing or figuring out what to use, yeah, that's the state of the industry right now. Like the struggle is real because there's a lot of really good choices. There's some bad choices, but there's a lot of really good choices. And choosing has become more of a problem than actually doing.
This kind of falls into other areas as well. I mean, you were talking about Reddit or Redditors, I suppose, kind of having their own technical biases. And the thing is, I mean, I'm no different. I do not have a Mac. I don't have a MacBook. I use Windows. That's what I use. And I'm not necessarily going to go and like crap all over someone's parade if they bought a MacBook and that's what they love. But at the same time, I know that I'm very dismissive when someone says, well, you should get a Mac. I'd be like, yeah, yeah. And I don't pay attention to that. I'm a Windows guy. I'm in the Microsoft ecosystem for, you know, personal and professional reasons, or not personal, professional reasons, but in the personal and professional side of things, because Microsoft offers a wider range of products and services. So that's just where I live. I live in this ecosystem. That's where I am. They kind of just leave me alone. I learned how to work on these things, play with them, you know, et cetera. Just that's where I am. And that's a bias, right? That's a bias. And this absolutely can happen with choosing whether it's a no code tool, a custom code technical stack, where someone is, you know, they've learned and they've worked and they've played with React and they're super into React. But when we look at things a little more objectively, which is what I want to do in this episode, which is, you know, kind of, I know this is obviously my opinion still and Mike's opinions as well, but I'm trying to take the question, you know, is there a best way to make a website and look at it a little bit more objectively? And I've broken this down into three sort of distinct areas that I'm going to expand upon. The first of which is websites are complex. So the reason why the answer is no, there is not a best way to make a website is because some websites are technically complex and they require large tech stacks that have scaling in mind. So if we think about this, just the word scaling is a variable. We think, okay, today I'm going to have 100 users. Tomorrow I might have 1,000. The next day I might have 10,000. So 100, 1,000, 10,000. But that's relative. What if you go viral? What if people really like your layout? What if people really like your site? They really like your content. What if we blow right past all of our scaling ideas and we get right from 100 to 100,000 consistently? That's big. And that's a variable. That's a complexity. Again, websites are complex. And so you have this sort of problem here now where it's like, uh-oh, you know, the best way to make a website that we chose was for 100 to 1,000 to 10,000. Now what do we do? We're at 100,000. Maybe we just blew through our no-code limit. Maybe we blew through our custom-coded site's hosting limit. What if we didn't scale up enough and the site keeps crashing? You know, what if? Websites are complex. You know, these things are not easy to plan for, to build, and adding random variables like scaling, among many others, is a problem. That's why websites are complex. Another thing here is hosting and other fees can create a complex financial situation for businesses. For example, you can very easily, as a small business, and I mean small business, like a couple of people, maybe a maximum of 10 people, can very easily rack up a huge hosting bill. And you may not expect it. You think, well, we're small. But when you think about this other thing, think about these other things. For example, we had a small business approach us. And they wanted to, you know, have a CMS and, you know, sort of the whole thing. So it's like, all right, we choose a pre-built tool for them. They're a small business. They don't have much budget. They go, we install this platform. They're using it. One day they hit a problem. They say, oh, we got a problem here. I can't upload videos. And I said, well, like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to have the people stream it? And they said, yes. And I said, well, I'm going to tell you right now, at your budget, we can't have these videos transcoded, meaning if the video is uploaded in, say, 1080p, what transcoding means if I went onto, say, YouTube and I were to go to the quality selector and I chose 720p, it's transcoding it or converting it live on the fly. That requires a fair bit of computing power in comparison to a very low cost shared hosting plan that they had. So not only are they eating up a lot of space because text and images use statistically much less space than videos, but now they're also adding to that complexity. They need more computing power. And so they didn't even consider self-hosted videos. Now, we were able to solve that problem because they were able to just embed YouTube videos. They weren't aware that they could do that. Fair enough. No big deal. No harm, no foul here. But the point is, some businesses would not be able to use that solution. They would need to have self-hosted videos. And how many? 100? How long are they? What's the quality of them? So this is something that you, a very small company, could rack up an absolutely massive bill. Also, many tools we use now, WordPress plugins, no-code tools, various licensing, etc., for different tools, doesn't matter. Custom code, no code, doesn't matter. They're pay per use. Pay for how many users, pay for how much data is being put through, pay for, again, hosting hundreds of videos. Are you paying per video? Are you paying per megabyte? What are you paying for If you have a high usage of those tools and those tools are pay per use in some way, it's going to be difficult for you to keep that hosting bill at a reasonable price. This is a complexity that in testing was possibly missed because you only had your developer and your 9 other staffers go in there and mess around and, you know, make the thing work, play with the videos, but you didn't consider that 200 people may be trying to watch the same video all at the same time. They all have different internet connections, so they all need to, one person wants it at 1080p, one person wants it at 480p, and now you have this all these complexities. So now, again, like, was the video streaming tool, was the CMS tool that we chose, was it the best for the job? These are complexities that are easily, you can easily miss or easily overrun. Because I know some of you are rolling your eyes going like, well, plan better. Yeah, that's great and all, but you can't plan for things that are variable. There's always a chance that you will end up going over your pay-per-use without even realizing it. What happens if it's not even your user base? What if you plan for your user base? You know your user base is going to be 250. Okay, great. But then some random click mill or some random spammer comes in and plays a video 10,000 times because a bot is watching it over and over and over and over again. You're using a pay-per-use service. Did you plan for that? I mean, there's a lot of different complexities and lots of different areas that can easily play on the fact that websites are complex. And so it's hard or impossible, really, to choose the best way to make the site work. Think about the human connection as well. If we were to change gears here for a bit, multiple departments are involved. So branding, you know, maybe there's a branding department. Maybe there's a marketing department, right? The administration gets involved. Like, oh, like they, you know, the CEOs and all those, like they want to know how their websites or web apps are coming out. They want to know, how are we being represented? Is our marketing intact? You know, is the team represented? Is there a team page? Like something like that is important to the administration, right? Copywriting. How is the copy being written? Is the copy being written by the internal documentation team? Well, is that SEO friendly? I don't know. So now we're starting to add some cooks to the kitchen. We already had a bunch of technical cooks in the kitchen. Already had those in there. Which tool do we use? How much are we going to use them? How much scaling is there? But now it's like, well, does branding like that? Does marketing like this? Is that too much animation? Is it too little? Well, now we want more animation, but now the performance is hit. So now we got to talk about having a better way to do animations because branding wants more animations and we need the site to be performant. You see how these complexities, websites are complex. Again, I keep saying it. These complexities and the human element, which are complexities in their own right, these make the best way to make a website a really difficult, if not impossible, question to answer.
Yeah, just on the multiple departments thing, it becomes particularly complex when you don't see it coming, right? So when you design something, you get the requirement sign off from your team, from your lead or whoever, or your client, and everything looks good. And then you start building and Joe from marketing comes in. They're like, well, on this previous project that I worked on, we had this analytics and this analytics. And on this previous project, we had this email marketing. Why isn't this here? Like, this should be standard. That's I'm not saying that as like something that like could happen. That has happened to me multiple times at this point where like I've had that exact conversation with marketing people and they're like, yeah, this should be standard on every website that you create. Like, why? Like, we didn't have to put this into the requirements. This should be in there. And then you have to explain to them like, no, like this isn't standard. This is a whole other cost factor. And they're like, well, cost shouldn't matter. Like you get into this back and forth and it becomes a very complex thing. Like the unfortunate reality is that to build a website to 80% completion is actually very easy. You can do it in any tech stack you want. It's that final 20% where like you're trying to adjust for everyone's needs and use cases that takes way more time than the first 80%. Like, they're like, well, we need all these ways to contact our users in different marketing streams, right? Different email streams. So you need to, not only do you need to like add the ability for your website to be able to send out email notifications based on like timed decisions, but you also have to market the audience that's being used based on their interaction with your website with tags. Like, it just goes down this rabbit hole of complexity that on the surface level seems really simple and intuitive, but in the implementation layer is extremely complex. And you get into this back and forth with the team that you're working with that like, hey, we're going to spend 10 times more time on this than we did building the website that's generating X amount of income. Do we really want to go down that route, or should we like, you know, finish the website or get to this stage and then maybe have like the next sprint, bring on another developer to work on. Like, you have to have these conversations, because if you don't set the right expectations from the get-go, whether you're the developer or working with a client, it's going to come up with a bad user experience in the end, because the marketing team at the end of the day is going to have a lot of say in keeping you around or not, even if that doesn't make inherent sense. But they're the ones that are constantly talking to, like, the decision makers on the at the company. And if they don't like you because you're not, you know, providing them with the tools that they are used to, there's a good chance that you're not going to survive at the company. So from the onset of this is, like, websites are complex. Yes. Relationship building inside of website development and making sure that the requirements that you're building are the right requirements based on the technical stack that you've chosen. That whole smorgasbord of words that I just said is the reason that, like, one developer is better than the other developer, is the reason that you might be promoted or not promoted, is the reason that you might make it in the industry and you might not. The just reality check. Like, it's that crazy of a situation, because if you're not able to adapt to that environment, you're going to burn yourself out, or you're going to get pushed out. It's a crazy competitive atmosphere, or in that sense. Like, it's complex. Like, websites are complex is a very significant understatement, because of all this other crap that we have to deal with.
It's sort of like the marrying of, like, websites are complex, technology is complex, people are complex, and they're all in the same formula. And it adds this, I mean, layer of complexity. You know, to keep saying the word complex over and over again is almost tiring, but it's just the fact of the matter, right? It is a complicated, complex way to deal with things. Or it's a complex path to get to a website being 80 to 100% complete. Like you said, 80 is probably pretty easy. And you're right. How many tools out there can you spin up, you know, this afternoon, if you know what you're doing, to quickly get a blog going? Even if you don't know what you're doing, Google it. How do I get a blog going? Spin up a WordPress.com. Boom. But then how many people in the marketing department go, well, the goal actually isn't to get our word out there. The goal is to get our word out there and in this very specific way with this specific set of statistic analytics tools. We don't want to use Google Analytics. We had a custom thing. And then you have that, well, hang on. No, like, our main thing is to market. That's the company's, you know, mantra at this time. That's our goal. But the marketing guy goes, yeah, but this random statistics tool is as critical to me as the company making money. That's often what will happen. And you and I have experienced that a lot, Mike, where companies will come in or people will come in and say, like, why isn't this standard? Where is this? And it's like, hey, that's a different piece of software. And, you know, it's not necessarily all their fault. You know, sometimes if they don't back down, there comes a point, right? There's a push and pull, bit of a tug of war. If they don't back down when you explain something, then, you know, the onus starts going on to them, right? The onus can be on you for having not informed them fully. You know, again, the push and pull. But at the end of the day, you know, they maybe didn't even know to ask that question because they thought maybe there was only one statistics tool. Like, they don't know. But this also, again, here's some complexity, is I have reached a point in my career where I no longer feel sorry for people that are technically misinformed. I will explain tech to you. I'm not saying that it's your job as a non-technical staffer who hired a technical staffer, which is me. I'm not saying it's your job to, you know, check my work and constantly, you know, try to, I suppose you could say, like, research the technology. I'm not saying that you need to become versed in tech. You hired me to do that. But when I explain the tech to you and you just, like, you know, won't listen or you don't care, or that's a very common one where the people just don't care. Like, that's not my job. I don't care. But it's like, yeah, but it is affecting your job because you're logging into it and you have to use it every day. Right. So I just have, like, this no sympathy layer that I've sort of developed, that where I just go, like, I told you the instructions on how to log in 18 times. Your password does not need to be reset again. Sort of figure it out. Bit of a tough love thing. Now, I understand the customer's always right, whatever. But the thing is that's a complexity with me, is, like, I will tell you exactly how to do it. I will guide you, but I don't have sympathy for if you didn't pay attention 18 times and you keep saying tech is not my job. That's nice. You still use a computer, don't you? You know, like that's kind of where I'm at. And that's a complexity with me a little bit, where I've developed this sort of thing because, unfortunately, I would spend the entire time holding the hands of two people in the company, whereas everyone else is fine. We have a guy who can't log into his email, and, like, he's a digital marketer. I mean, at this point, it's like he can't log into his personal email. Like, I've helped him log into his personal email. What is going on? You've logged into your personal email with me over and over again for, like, 2 or 3 years. You should be able to log into your personal email. he's worked for other companies where he had to sign in and he didn't ask me because clearly, so I guess he must have went to their IT company. How many times do you have to tell you to log in a personal email? So again, like maybe it's bad customer service or something, but I have this sort of like crust where I'm just like, I don't like, sorry, man, I helped you like 18 times, you know. I'm not going to tell you off, but I'm also just going to keep like sending you the documentation over and over again, I guess, just to save time. And that's a complexity that I add to the table, and their hand-holding is a complexity they add to the table. And we're not even really talking about tech. We're talking about logging in, which is the most low-hanging fruit ever. Everyone needs to log in all the time. You set up Windows, you got to log in. Whether it's a local or a online Microsoft account, you still got to log in. And logging in is still this big thing for some people. That's a complexity, even though it's not complex. The tech is easy. The people are complex in this way. That's why websites are so complex. And there's also a bit of like kind of corporate tag, if you will, corporate game, because who's making the site? Is the site being made by the internal team? Is the site being made by an external team? How much do you give to that external team if that's the case? How much other work does the internal team have to do? Is it a hybrid where the internal team is designing it and the external team is developing it? How do they get along? is the budget okay? Does one company's policy conflict with the other company's policy? Websites are complex.
Yep. One thing that I think people take for granted or is just treated differently is that websites and web tech is treated a little bit like mundane or as like secondary in a company when they're, especially when they're doing like technical expenditure, cost analysis, whatever. When they're estimating a project, they're like, oh, this is a website, probably won't cost that much. Whereas like if they're doing like, oh, this is an internal tool that is going to like, you know, solidify our index portfolio or whatever, like random words that requires like some custom engineering that's not web related. They're like, oh, this is going to cost a ton. So we're going to need to allocate a bunch of resources and a bunch of developers to this. Whereas like a website seems to get less resources a lot of times in larger companies. And this, I think, is biting people in the ass because the fact that a website is web tech is not complex is so irrelevant now. Like the fact you can do everything on the web now. And a lot of companies started to do that because they realized that it's quote unquote cheaper to build obviously for one thing that runs on every device rather than having a custom Windows, a custom Mac OS application, a custom whatever other OS you need to build. You can just have a web UI and then connect to whatever backend you need. Good to go. Like that's not to say it's not complex, though. Like the whole process of connecting, you know, the UI to the whatever backend, adapting it, making sure that it's working and showing up correctly on multiple devices and, you know, using JavaScript to be able to make sure that there's no errors as well. Like if JavaScript's not an easy language to create stable software in. You need to have someone that knows what the hell they're doing to be able to create stable and tested software because JavaScript inherently fights you on it. There's no compiler. Like it's just, hey, you know, you put it out there, it just runs. It either runs or it breaks. And the edge cases aren't tested by the compiler like in some other languages that like make hold your hand pretty much being like, hey, you wrote this thing here wrong. So like down the line, if you put like a number in here instead of a string, it's going to break your whole website. JavaScript's like, fuck it, just do whatever the heck you want and we'll see what happens. So like in a sense, it's it's back to that. Like, yes, in a sense that like just to get something going and get something to appear on a screen, web tech is technically easy. But to make stable, you know, scalable, complex software solutions that you want to last and to be able to build on top of is very difficult, arguably more difficult than other languages because of its limitations. Like, yes, you can add TypeScript to it, but now you have to, you know, deal with the TypeScript. Like, there's like a million different decisions making websites more complex, right? So they should be treated as full software solutions rather than just websites. And I'm saying that in air quotes, because a lot of times they are.
No, you're starting to allude to the next point here, actually, which is, you know, tech has pros and cons. You mentioned the whole JavaScript thing where JavaScript just goes like, well, I don't know if it's a string or a number, but have at her. You'd have no idea that an edge case may happen. And then down the road, it's like, well, the whole site's down and the database is corrupt and who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's all real. Yeah,
like that's a real thing. Like, even though JavaScript is not, at least on the platform, the vanilla platform, not a backend tech, I mean, it could still affect the data that's going eventually going to the backend tech. Or, of course, if you're using Node, it, you know, there's a lot of nuance here. Like, there's a lot of nuances here that we're talking about, and we're just touching, slightly talking about JavaScript. And that leads me to my next point. Tech has pros and cons. So is there a best way to make a website? The answer is no, and it's because tech has pros and cons. Like most everything else in life, tech has pros and cons. There's a bit of a gray area. Again, we're going to keep talking about that over and over again. So, for example, a real easy one to discuss, not even talking about web tech. Some tech is easy to set up, but hard to scale. Some stuff is built to scale, but hard to set up. That's an example. Personal requirements may impact what tech you can use. So again, we're adding the human element here. Not only are we like, do we need to scale? Do we want to have a quick setup? Like, what do we want here? Uh-oh. Someone comes in and says, well, I refuse to have downtime for a migration. That's a classic one. And Mike and I have talked about this on the show in the past. And so it's like, well, how would you, like, I got asked this last week. How would you do this? Like, how do big companies not have downtime? I'm just like, you have to have a failover, meaning that one system is intentionally basically scuttled while the other system is ready to catch the failure. And then it kind of subs in and becomes the main system. And then we decommission the one that's failed. This is two, that's two systems. That's two systems you have to have. That adds to the complexity, as we already talked about. It adds to the price, which we already talked about in the complexity section. And some technology is going to have an easy to use sort of failover system or migration system in which there is minimal or no downtime. However, some platforms or whatever you're using may not even consider this. It's not a part of their mantra. They don't care. It's if you migrate away from us, you have to shut everything off, export the data, and reconstruct it somewhere else. And there may be small little things that you can do to mitigate some downtime, but there is going to be downtime no matter what. This lends into last week's episode, which is vendor lock-in, where some vendors are going to be like this, where a migration may be very difficult to leave, or maybe very difficult to leave a vendor. It may be impossible to leave a vendor cleanly, possibly, right? This is these are technologies, pros and cons. Easy to migrate, easy to set up. Is it easy to scale, or is it hard to scale? Is it hard to migrate? What is this? And I have a list of examples here. First one here is using vanilla tech, meaning your HTML, your CSS, and your JavaScript is often performant, but arguably, and maybe even statistically, I haven't checked the numbers, but a lot of people will say that it is slow to develop with, and that it is difficult to scale with the dev team. So one person working in vanilla tech may be super easy, and maybe that person is fast at it, but once a couple people start coming in, a couple more developers get hired, it's easier to just have, you know, React there. All the syntax and stuff has been dictated by the platform. It's been dictated by the framework. And so everyone, for the most part, can read most of the code and can implement new changes and add components and whatever needs to be done. So vanilla tech, you could say, has a pro of being often performant, easy to set up for, you know, a small team, usually a single person. But as the actual team itself scales, difficult to develop with. So this has, there's a scaling issue with vanilla tech. Also, using SvelteKit, a combination of the both, whatever, it's less popular than React, for example. At least as of recording this, it's less popular. So you may not have as many job prospects as you would if you learned React. You learned Svelte and Svelte/SvelteKit. You might only be able to apply to, say, 10 jobs and the other 100 are React. I don't know. That's just made up numbers. I don't have a real statistic on that. But the development experience of Svelte/SvelteKit is regarded as better by many people I've seen on Twitter and other places make this comment saying it's better than React. So do you want a better developer UI UX or do you want more job prospects? Here's that. Again, tech has pros and cons. Let's talk about React then. We're not going to dunk on React. React is the popular kid on the block. It has a lot of technical support. There's lots of documentation. There's lots of community support, which is also documentation. People are writing blog posts. People are writing guides. And on a professional level, like there are professional blogs, people that write, do technical writing full time, and some of their content is going to be about React. There's a bunch of other documentation as well, such as videos, like video guides. People will go on YouTube and they talk about it. They show things in shorts and TikToks, little short form bits of content. They talk about the updates that are coming. They talk about the changes that need to happen. They reminisce about the good old days of React. What's coming up? React is the popular kid on the block. So what's the pro? The pro is you if you learn React, you're probably going to have a bunch of great job prospects. You're going to have a lot of great areas or places rather to learn React. To troubleshoot React is a big one. But there's always a con. The UX UI is arguably worse than Svelte/SvelteKit. It's arguably worse. We also had a recent episode talking to what's the React performance guys?
Million.js team.
That's it. Million.js. We just had talking to the staffers, the founder and one of the key staffers at Million.js. Like that whole company, that whole performance enhancement exists because the con of React was that there was some performance problems, some questionable things, not as performant as it could be. That's a con. Like no doubt. Tech, all tech has pros and cons. Take it into no code. I mean, Webflow has problems. Webflow allows you to, you know, really quickly dig in and has themes that you can use. And those themes are pre-built, but they're built like Lego blocks. They're basically built in HTML and CSS. You can go in there and you can just really rip it all to pieces and change everything. Visually, I suppose. You go in there and you go into the visual designer and you go in there and you change it. You can add editors or collaborators to the website where they only have access to the editor. So they can't change structure, but they can change content. There's a whole bunch of stuff, the CMS, there's APIs with the CMS where you can connect it to apps and whatever else. And there's a whole bunch of great stuff. But I mean, Webflow is more expensive than a shared host with a bit of custom code. If you just want a basic blog, no doubt. Webflow also has a scaling problem where it scales up quite a lot. But if you hit the enterprise tier, it's kind of like a negotiate your price type of deal. And what if that negotiated price doesn't work for you? I mean, you're in trouble. Like you're a little bit of vendor lock there. So that's a piece of technology that maybe offers a bit too much vendor lock for you. Maybe it's perfect for you. Like who knows? Tech is pros and cons. You have to analyze these, the good, the bad, the potential, if you will. And you have to choose what will work for you. What would work best for your website?
Yeah, what would work in general for your website, period, right? Like,
yeah,
a lot of these just might not work for whatever you're building. Like, if you're trying to build a very custom web application that's pulling in data from multiple sources and allowing users to submit data in real time and stuff like that, like, Webflow just won't work for you for the most part, right? Like, it might be able to do certain parts of that, but not the whole thing. So, like, you need to make sure that you're using tech that's a proper solution for the problem that you're trying to solve. And again, this comes back to like, you need to be a solutions architect at this point to be able to scope out a web project because of all the different variables of everything. Like you need to, like we could be, you know, pedantically talking about the pros and cons of different tech forever, but it's important for you to know that as someone that's a decision maker in your business or on your team or anything. Like if you ever want to get to that next level of developer, you're going to have to be somewhat of a decision maker. And yeah, you need to choose the right tech for the job. Now, having said that, like really, like if you're a custom tech developer and that's your niche and you're choosing React and you go through and build only React apps, like, yeah, like that's, you know, a custom solution will mostly always be able to accommodate any situation, right? The problem comes in when it comes down to time and cost, mm-hmm. right? Like if a client or a project doesn't require a custom solution, but you're that custom developer that always proposes a custom solution and your solution is, you know, $20,000 because it's custom, and another person can come in and be like, well, I can build that in Webflow in like 3 days and charge you like $5,000. That's a big difference. And it's probably going to be like, you know, 3 days, $5,000 versus, you know, 3 months, $20,000 for the same exact thing. And only because you've decided that you're that custom solutions guy. Now, again, there's nothing wrong with that inherently. If you don't want to deal with no code, you don't want to deal with no code. And if you want to price people out, that's one way to do it, right? And let them make their own decisions. They're, you know, business owners. But you are limiting what you can do. And you are limiting also, like, if you're again, a solutions architect, and you're trying to work with the client and make the best possible thing for them, both from a cost, speed, and a technology perspective, your decision to use something that's slower and more expensive is affecting your client, regardless of its technical capabilities. And I think we're going to talk about like the business decisions or not technical decisions, and it's a really key point here. So like, yeah, it's important that this whole conversation that we have doesn't revolve around like, hey, you know, React is better than Svelte or Svelte is better than React. Yeah, it's important to know those things though.
There's absolutely a reason why, you know, people research and check things out. Because, I mean, even just no-code tools, I mean, we're working with a company right now that needs to be able to maintain their own store locator and doesn't have enough money to pay us to build their own. Fair enough. There's a whole bunch of solutions out there. But even though it's a no-code solution, the cheaper option for them, the one that's budget-friendly for them, is for me to go and research it. I didn't just Google it and then give them the first one that showed up. I go in and I look at it and I read things up and I try the free trials maybe, and I kind of do this, you know, whatever, within the amount of hours allotted I'm allowed for consulting. And I come up with an idea solution and I give it to them. And then, you know, they take it and run with it, or maybe they take it and run with it with my assistance, or what have you. I mean, even the quote unquote simple tools, the ready-made solutions, they need to be looked at. And like with raw tech, like I'm calling, you know, vanilla platform, React, Svelte, / Svelte-kit, those like sort of custom code solutions, that raw tech, that stuff really needs to be vetted, right? You need to really take a look and go like, do we need this? Like, imagine hiring all Svelte developers and then you chose React without knowing what the heck was going on. Like, that's a mess. And that's a mess of business decision. So I'm going to use that to transition into the third and final section here. And again, is there a best way to make a website? The answer is no, because business decisions are not technical decisions. So when you have a business to run, not all your decisions can be technical. But if your business runs or works with tech, then you can't just be making exclusively business decisions either. You have to have a marrying of these two things. Technical decisions are married to business decisions in that the right tech can help or hurt your productivity. This goes back to the old sort of time is money quote, but it's true. Time is money. You don't want to be spending a month setting up the basic blogging fields and all that stuff of a CMS for someone who just wants to write a little hobbyist blog, who like goes fishing and wants to write down his favorite fishing spots. You know, do you really need to have a custom coded solution for that? Time is money here. No. Tell him to go to WordPress.com, charge a little bit of consulting if allowed, and call it a day. Like, why not? So these technical and these business decisions need to be married together. So for example, choosing Webflow for your website may seem like a bad move from a developer's perspective. We hear this a lot. Well, you know, it's limited, it's got all these problems and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't really have any other problems that I'm aware of that other no-code platforms don't have. Their problems vary, but basically the overarching problem is that any platform, no-code or otherwise, has limitations, because obviously someone made the tool and there's limits to the tool. The tool doesn't have 14 million features that are ready to serve everybody. But let's just say, for example, okay, we want to choose Webflow for our site. The developer says, you know, it's, I don't like this. Like, I think we should be doing custom. What's the business perspective say? Well, Webflow has limitations in comparison to custom code, no doubt, but custom code costs this much per hour and takes a long time to spin up basic features that Webflow will have right out of the box. And many of the features that we're going to use, let's say in this hypothetical project, let's just say it's a tech blog. In this tech blog, the CMS is good enough for us. Webflow is good for us. The builder is good. You know, the guy who's the person that's putting together the UI knows HTML and CSS, and that's largely how you set up user interfaces in Webflow. So this is great. This is going to be faster than custom code for us. So custom code is going to take too long to get the basics spun up, is what we conclude. It's like, okay, we know we've looked at both sides. We've looked at the developer perspective. We've also looked at the business perspective. So by that definition, Webflow saves us time. But now we have the complexity question coming back in. Websites are complex, remember. So how complex is the project you're working on? Is it more website than web app? Is it more web app than website? Is it kind of a hybrid of both? Is it a marrying of both? What is this? And we see companies all the time, and we'll talk about them later, where they'll use Webflow, for example, as the marketing site because it's quick and easy and needs to be rapidly changed by people that don't want to deal with custom code or don't know how. Perfect. But then the web app is on a subdomain or a different domain, however they figured out their SEO and their technical structure. And that part, the web app part, is custom coded in a similar branding, meaning visual, but completely different tech stack than what Webflow is using. So there's another question. Are we going to spin off a part of our site? Is that okay? Do we want everything on one thing? If we do, okay, then that's a requirement. That's a requirement. We have to question. You know, time is money, but also the tech comes in here too. So think about scaling. How much scaling is required? So it's always good. We'll just follow the rule of thumb that scaling with a buffer zone, right? A degree of error is what we should be doing. So if we expect the site to grow from 100 people to 10,000 people, let's say we have a buffer of 5,000. So we actually budget for 100 to 15,000 people. That's what we want to do, 15,000. Okay, there's our buffer. But what if it does go to 20? Can Webflow accommodate that? Let's just say, for the sake of example, that Webflow's price will increase a lot for that. Okay, can we accommodate that? Is the cost still is the cost to time spent still beneficial? Does it make sense to have someone custom code something up, maybe put it on a cheaper host that's easier to scale moving forward? Does that make sense? Well, no, because it's 1,000 hours of coding versus 3 days on Webflow. How quick is it going to be for us to be able to move to full custom code? Should we go over our 15,000 budget? Does it even make sense? Are we going to be making so much money at the point of, if we were to breach through our buffer, we're at 20,000 people, let's say. Are we going to be making so much money that it doesn't matter that we're not min-maxing our price? Webflow can name their price. We're going to be rolling in it. It doesn't matter. Is that part of the business decision? This is why websites are complex. This is why business decisions are not technical decisions. There's a lot of questions here, and the perspectives are unique. Someone who's a developer is going to be, for the most part, be talking about the tech and saying, this tech's easier to work with. I like this tech, maybe even. It works well with my IDE. It's easy to code on Windows if it's me. Something like that. Whereas someone else might come in and say, I'm the business manager here. I know all the all of our metrics. And I know that our competitors are coming in hot and fast. And if we do not get this up next month, we're going to be second or third to the pile, and we're going to be in trouble. We're going to be playing catch up. Playing catch up is going to cost the company this much. Screw the tech stack. Spin it up on Webflow. Spin it up on WordPress. We need this out now, or we're going to get crushed. We're going to lose this segment. That's a real question mark. Is that okay? Right? These are two perspectives that they don't have the insights into each other, where there's a little bit, of course, the developer is going to be aware the company needs to make money, and the business person is going to be aware that the developer needs to create things, needs to have technical expertise to do so. But the developer does not have the insight into the company's, you know, grander sort of, okay, are we in the right market segment? Is this going to be, great to scale? Are we going to get there first? Should we get there first? Like, those are really specific things to the business side. And the business person is not going to be aware that by just changing one piece of tech, you're either adding or removing hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of development time. So it is a question. So these decisions, technical and business decisions, need to be married together, which is complex. We keep coming back to the complexity thing, but this is really crucial.
Yeah. I think, like, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Like, the complexity comes in, especially with the communication side of things between the business and the technical side. But the one thing I want to emphasize is that communication is really important. Like, the technical side should be talking to the business side and vice versa to stop these situations from happening, from spinning out of control. Because if the business side is like, well, we need this to be out in a month because our competitors are coming and we're going to be screwed, and the technical side has no idea why that's happening, there's going to be resentment building there. There's going to be like, okay, we're just using a no-code platform for no reason. But the reality is there is a really good reason. Business side has already said that. Like, this is the reason that we need to go with the fast solution. And if they have a direct line of communication, or if they're in that meeting and they're making that decision together, the buy-in that, like, the idea that you're all part of it together is going to help in the implementation of that technical decision from the business side of things. Like, it's a really complex system, but it's important that both sides are in it together. Otherwise, it's just going to lead to a bad software solution. And it's going to come down to the same thing with like the marketing team coming in. And if they weren't part of the technical implementation scoping, like if no one from the technical side or the project management side reached out to marketing during that time, and then all of a sudden they have this product that doesn't have any of the analytics that they need to do their job, then obviously there's going to be friction there. Like this, you know, like you can't blame the marketing people for wanting the information that they need for the product to be able to like prove that they're doing their jobs. Like think about it from their perspective. Like they are trying to sell more X, right? How are they going to prove that they're selling more X if there's no analytics to show that other than like a number go up? They need to show that, hey, I've pushed this. This segment of the audience has reacted to it. So like it comes down to this like really tough situation of having to manage all the different stakeholders of everything that you're building, but it being a requirement. And again, yes, it makes it more complex, but it is a requirement. And that's why this stuff is hard. And that's why we have our jobs. That's why we have higher salaries than the average and stuff like that. Like this isn't because this is all easy and you love to build stuff and React and it's all like, you know, you're just sitting there and coding all day. It's because of this really difficult like hybrid of different like foundational elements of a company having to come together and make this one product that moves the company forward, right? Like it's really difficult. And that's why I don't see AI coming in and being able to solve this for you anytime soon. I think AI is always going to be there to like help with this kind of situation. But the problem is that like, unless you're a domain expert and you've done it a bunch of times in these really custom situations, and you have that ability to communicate and understand each other perfectly, it's just not going to work. Like gathering requirements and then implementing those requirements in a way that corresponds to the person's view of what they've gathered is the hardest part of development. It's not implementation, which is what AI can kind of help with right now. That back and forth gathering is something it's trying to do, but from all the testing that I've done, it's not able to extract the right information to be able to solve a problem from start to finish, because it's just like, it's not because it doesn't know it, because obviously it has way more scope of knowledge than we do. The problem is that it doesn't know what the person it's talking to doesn't know, if that makes sense. That person's domain expertise is complete black box to the AI. Whereas you and me, we know each other as people. So I can understand that, hey, you're not a technical person. If I ask you technical gobbledygook, it's going to give you no understanding. And if you tell me something that is seemingly impossible, I'm going to be able to tell you why it's impossible in your language, because I know who we are. But an AI has no idea who this person is, and it's going to talk to them as if they're, you know, General Joe Schmo or super technical. It doesn't care. So at side tangent there, but like that's the complexity that I don't see it solving anytime soon. I think it'll get there, but it might be like a decade.
It's a good point, because even when you were talking there, I was thinking, you know, we were obviously talking about the business decisions versus the technical decisions, but the business decisions themselves have complexities in that there's levels. Depending on the size of the company, the CEO and the sort of higher sort of circle of administration there may not give an absolute hoot, if you will, about what technology they use or whatever. They're going to set a direction. They're going to say something as simple as, we're going to create a YouTube clone. We're going to create a YouTube competitor. They don't care about the difficulties. They didn't ask about the hosting and stuff like that. And whereas those realities do affect them, the people beneath them, the people that are working on it, do need to be the ones that implement it, do the research, figure things out. And then the people that, like, let's say there's three levels of management. So they're at number one, they're at the top. Number two, like they tell the second level of management, level two, okay, you know, you need to make a YouTube clone. We're going to compete with YouTube. They then talk to us. We're at level three. We're level three. We go, oh my God, okay, we got to do this, this, this. Okay, we need hosting and blah, blah, blah. And we get all the details, like the grunt work done. We give that to level two. Level two then puts it up to level one. Telephone game a bit, right? Now we have a bit of telephone game in there, but also they might go, level one might go, I didn't ask you to tell me the price. I told you to do it, and I told you to do it at this price. So now we go, okay, how are we going to cut costs? The budget we said is too high. Okay, what do we do? You know what I mean? So there's like the telephone game. There's the complexities of the levels of these decisions. Like this is, Like, how is AI going to like discern all that stuff? And like you said, kind of the personal demeanor side of things, where like some CEOs are going to be super graceful and you know, talk to the people, and they don't care whether you're a level one tech, level five tech. They don't care. They're just going to talk to you and get the solution done. Some CEOs operate by what I call them being mean, really, which is pretty much just saying, go make a YouTube clone and tell me how much it's going to cost. I want it done next month. And that's their order. That's what they've said. And you better do it. You know, that's how some the different management types. Right. And I know saying mean makes you sound like a little kid. He was mean to me. But like, that's just in my head. That's how I sort of categorize, I suppose, how I deal with different people, because obviously we deal with tons and tons of different people with different clients, different budgets and different demeanors, different personas, etc. So that's just how I categorize people, I guess. I know that this person wants to be told everything. This person doesn't want to be told much. This person just wants you to do what they said. They don't ask. They don't care how much it costs, right? Different people, different ways to manage it, which is even another complexity of our business, which I'm not going to get into because we've been talking about it forever. So we've already kind of touched on this throughout the episode, but what do we do? As a conclusion to this episode, you know, we've kind of mentioned all these problems and mentioned some solutions, right? Like looking at gray areas, you know, doing things like that. What do we do? There isn't a best way to make a website. So how do we make one? And like we've touched on, the answer lies somewhere between. It lies in that gray area. React is not going to be your end all be all. Svelte isn't going to be. Webflow isn't. WordPress, WordPress.com, WordPress.org. It doesn't matter. Self-hosted, not self-hosted, shared hosting, VPS. The list goes on and on. Nothing is going to work perfectly. There's pros and cons with everything. There's pros and cons with people. Some people are good at this. Some people are bad at this, etc. There's a lot of gray area. And so the answer lies in the gray area. And each project that we do needs and should be analyzed and prioritized in a way that makes as many of your decisions as possible, quote unquote, informed decisions. You want as many informed decisions as you can. And I would like to just say as a brief thing is that you don't need to go through a huge analytical process for some things. We've talked about this a lot. A lot of this is going to be big decisions. But if you decide for fun, you want to make a Harry Potter app, or you want to make an app that lists all the Pokemon or something, short of there being a legal restriction on you doing so, you just want to do that for fun. If you use the stack, or use a stack, excuse me, that works, but kind of, you know, in the background, it's sort of like using 60% more CPU than needed, but it still works fine and everyone uses it. I mean, it was a personal project. Who cares, right? That's something that, you know, analyze it and you go, this doesn't matter. This isn't for customers. This doesn't need to be scaled. This is just me listing the different evolutions of Pikachu or something, you know, it's just something for fun, something for you to play with. And it should be prioritized as such. I'm just gonna do this whenever I feel like it. It's just for fun, whatever, you know, well, should I use Webflow for it? Nah, I don't want to pay that. Maybe I'll do custom code. Nah, custom code kind of sucks. I'll go back to Webflow. Nah, let's do a WordPress.com. Why not? Let's try that. You know, some things when they're analyzed are nonchalant, and that's just what I kind of want to drive home.
A lot of this comes down to compromise. So you shouldn't be looking for the perfect solution at all, because you're never going to find it. As we've said, there's pros and cons to everything. So you need to learn the art of compromise in both the business sense and the technical sense. How I've seen it kind of worded is that after the decision has been made to go forward with something, everyone in the room should be a little bit like uncomfortable with the decision, because they've compromised somewhat. Because if marketing is uncomfortable, if technical is uncomfortable, like not unhappy, I should be very clear. I think just like, you know, like not getting exactly what they want, right? So everyone's a little bit compromised, like everyone's compromised a little bit from like the CEO all the way down to the technical side, then you're probably moving towards the right direction, because now you've got something that everyone's agreed on, even though they're not like 100%, you know, didn't get 100% of what they wanted, but they know that it's doable and feasible. Right. So that feeling that when you're leaving a meeting and you're like, ah, shit, I wish I got that one little thing, but it's not like critical because I got the critical stuff. That's an okay feeling to have for these kinds of decisions. Okay. So if you're going in and you're like, I want to build this in Svelte and no matter what, but then like at the end of the meeting, you get to the point where you're building it in React because you've compromised on the fact that, hey, React has more developers, et cetera, et cetera. That's okay. That's just an example, but like I'm just saying, like it's okay to compromise, and you should go to it with the ability to compromise.
I wonder if it's even a red flag if you're too comfortable. If you're just like, if you leave a meeting and you're like, man, That went pretty perfect.
I got everything.
Like, how crazy is the end result going to be? Are you going to be like tearing your hair out going, oh, this person was a yes man. They said yes to everything mm-hmm. I said, and this is too expensive, or this sucks. Like, it's like it does everything, but it's not great. It's just not of high quality. Is that what's going to happen? It's a very good observation. Conceding, I suppose you could say, conceding certain points and making compromises in areas that make sense, you know, make sense. There's a classic thing where, you know how, I guess it's a meme at this point, where the $10,000 client just says, thanks for the payment, or like, thanks, payment sent, once you say, hey, I'm done the website. And then there's the $500 client that's like, you know, you're part of our family, this is really crucial to our family's future, you know, this is going to, you know, power my kids' like trust fund, or it's gonna like power my kids' like tuition. This needs to be absolutely perfect. You need to be on call 24/7 for me. Like, this is wild how important this is. And it's just sort of like, okay. It's like they're uncompromising in that, right?
Yes.
That's correct. and that's a problem. And that's why that meme exists. And we have dealt with people like that. Because, for example, if they don't like one little tiny thing in a CMS, like let's say we use Couch CMS and they don't like how the publish button looks. Sort of like, yeah, but does that, sorry to say this, but does that matter? Like, you're on a tiny budget. Who cares? And they sometimes will not compromise. Be like, yeah, but now that publish button's broken. Or like, I don't like it. I consider it broken because I don't like the look of it. It's orange or something. Sort of like an eyebrow raiser. Like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? And that happens. You know, that type of stuff happens. And we've had arguments with people where it's like, this is like, there's not a piece of software out there that is perfect. And that's another thing that you have to concede. There's not a piece of software out there that's perfect, whether it's custom coded or not. And you're going to have some problems. How many times has your phone today missed a tap of your finger? Probably a whole freaking bunch. Probably a whole bunch. It's even possibly messed up your work to some extent. But you live with it. You don't call Apple every time there's a misclick. Be like, misclick there. You see that misclick there? Like, send logs. it's lunacy. And some people who are uncompromising are like that. But moving on to the final part of the episode, just to sort of cap things off, is a couple of examples. Now, Mike is going to talk about a hybrid solution. I'm going to talk about a WordPress solution. So when choosing a WordPress plugin, ask yourself. So these are really zoomed in examples. I don't want to go off on a huge tangent for an hour. What you need a WordPress plugin. Maybe it's going to manage your RSS feed. Okay, RSS feed management, whatever you're doing with it, it's fine. Okay, so we think, we don't want a custom coded solution. We want to use a WordPress plugin that exists. Okay, first decision made. That's great. Okay. Is this a key or a foundational plugin? There's a question you should ask yourself. Is this really, really critical? And if a feature is removed in any way from what the features that currently exist in the plugin, if let's say in an update, one of them go away, is this plugin and its features so crucial to my business that I'm going to have to, you know, make some serious changes? If it is, maybe custom code is the way to go. Maybe we should backtrack and we should make a custom WordPress plugin. We should get someone to make one. Okay. If it isn't key or foundational, okay, great. So now we're going to take a look and see, okay, is it easily replaceable though? Are there alternatives? If there aren't, we take a look and we go, okay, it's not key or foundational, but is it going to make us look unprofessional? Like, for example, are all our filters going to break? If we have our RSS content being displayed nicely on the website and there's a filter up there that says, you know, filter by all of December 2023's, and we have a plugin that does that sorting, it is a question like, if this thing is not easily replaceable, the RSS feed's still going to display in full, but we're going to kind of look a little weird. Like, we're going to have a broken part of our website now. The filtering's not going to work. So is this thing easily replaceable, and are there alternatives? And to add to this, is there an easy way to back out of this? Can I just remove the filter section? Like, if this filter plugin starts making the site crash, can I just get rid of the filter plugin? It completely goes away and just the RSS feed shown in full, whether for the interim or just moving forward. Is that okay? That's a good question. Good couple of questions. And the final one here is, does the plugin get updates frequently enough? We update our website every 6 months. We update our website every month. We update our website, enter in time frame here, whatever works for you and whatever you think is good according to your IT department or your web developer's recommendation, right? Does this plugin get updated enough? Or is it maybe, you know, really simple and doesn't need to? Is it potentially a security problem? Like, what is this? And if you notice, obviously these are tailored questions to WordPress plugins. So just to come down to these questions, we had to go through all the discussions and all the rigmarole of deciding we're going to go with WordPress and we're going to go with WordPress plugin, whether we custom code or use a pre-existing solution or not. Then we have to ask ourselves these questions. And that's what I wanted to drive home with this example, is that this sounds really simple, right? If you're a person that's used WordPress plugins in production in the past, and you're worried about longevity of your website, of which many people are, for the sake that they don't want things to be broken and they want things to last a long time, get the most bang for their buck is the big thing. At the end of the day here, you want your WordPress to continue to run, and you have to ask yourself all these questions. You have to look through and be like, okay, and some of these you're going to get through really quick. Once you're experienced with WordPress, for example, you're going to go through and just going to be like, yeah, is it key or foundational? Yeah, good enough. Is it updated? Yep, good enough. You know, it's going to be just nonchalant for you, but these are still things you need to look at. And again, this is just one random isolated example about a WordPress plugin. Now, Mike, you have an example about Hybrid, which is a no-code solution being married with a custom solution. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think I'm not going to go too far into it because you mentioned the example a little bit before. But essentially what I'm thinking is, like, a lot of times now you have your development team is working on development tasks. You want them to be focused on development tasks. The problem is that if you're building a web app, part of that web app is probably still going to have some marketing material to it. So you have a couple options there. You can either get the development team to integrate a headless CMS into their web application that was built with custom code, and then that integration with the headless CMS will then be, you know, the way that the marketing team or DevRels or whatever interfaces with the website and changes some marketing content on there, like text and announcements and maybe even blog posts, whatever, right? Or the other option is that you do this hybrid solution that's like using a no-code platform like Webflow or WordPress just for the marketing pages, right? The pages that are maybe the landing pages for the web app, or an example would be like when you go to, you know, Google Docs, it'll take you to like a landing page, right? Showing you what Google Docs is, but then you click like launch app and it takes you to the Google Docs, right? So that landing page that you hit that doesn't really have anything interactive about it, it's just like a bunch of information about Docs, is the thing that can be built out in a no-code platform that the marketing team can control. And a lot of times what the marketing team will do is that they'll either partner with the design team and, you know, they'll make it together. Maybe the design team will make it, or they'll just get a quick contractor on board to build out the marketing pages, not bother the development team at all, and have it so that, like, if there's anything that needs to be connected, maybe some data passed back and forth, maybe the dev team is involved for like a couple hours there. But for the most part, the dev team is working on the app. The marketing page is being built out by marketing and design, and no one is, you know, being interfered with if anything needs to change in terms of like copy. So it's a good solution in a lot of cases, especially for small startups, to be able to build kind of things simultaneously and allow for quicker development of more professional looking platforms. Because now you have like these really professional looking marketing pages and a very professional app that is built custom and is able to do all the things that custom code does without wasting the developer's time building all of the, you know, custom components for the marketing pages, plus the integration that a headless CMS has. And trust me on this one, going the headless CMS route sounds awesome and sounds easy maybe, but it can be a huge headache because then you get to the point where now you're dealing directly with marketing and developer relations and everything about the limitations of the headless platform, and then building out custom solutions to go around the limitations because, again, it's like, will they compromise? Won't they compromise? So like just stopping that communication and having it be done in a different vertical is a good thing. Okay. Let the marketing team control that. Give that away, because then you have full control of the web application, a lot easier to work with. And now you're communicating in a more direct sense of like, here, I need this feature of this app, rather than, hey, I need you to, you know, change the content box on this page to be able to accept Markdown instead of whatever the heck you wrote to accept it. Anyway, that's my spiel. That's my example of how you can kind of apply this approach of like this gray area and being able to adapt to situations that rise up, rather than just sticking with like, okay, I'm just going to only go with one solution and I'm never going to, you know, move away from that because that's the right way to do things.
And one thing to add to your thing, Mike, is that it It removes some cooks from the kitchen. It doesn't use the development team, maybe, like you said, a contractor, but even that's a question mark, right? You're not adding the development team coming in and saying, I don't want to use this no-code tool, or I don't know this one, I want to know this one. And, you know, the questions and the conversation, again, humans are complex, tech is complex, and so these complexities are going to play in. So the more people you can remove from the equation that do not need to be there, you know, there's a reason why there's a need-to-know thing, or like kind of meme, or not a meme, but like a reality. Like some people are need to know, some people do not need to know certain things. And that's why, because you don't want to have all this cross-pollination of everyone having an opinion on everything, knowing everything, chaos. So the more people you can remove, usually the better off you're going to be. You save some money, time is money, etc. But that's it. That concludes this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Go make some good business / technical decisions out there on your websites. And if you have anything to add to this episode, please let us know. I run the Instagram and the Threads now. You can go check us out on Threads. And Mike, you run the Twitter. Go check it out. DM, you know, one or both of us and say, you know, I do this and I do that and this is how I manage it and whatever. Also, go check us out on Discord if you want to do the same thing. And if you want to support the show, you can go check us out on that Patreon. That is patreon.com/HTML. All the things. And many thanks to our $3 tier patrons. Tim from The Web Hacker on thewebhacker.com. Jason from Geek Life Radio via geeklifradio.com. Fire Ant Season via fireantseason.com. Garrett Segal. Level Up Financial Planning via www.levelupfinancialplanning.com. And Joshua via silvio.us. We'd also like to give a shout out to a contributing author on htmlallthethings.com. That is Michael LaRocca. He is the author of Self-Taught, the X Generation blog at selftauttxg.com. So go check that out as well. And if you want to learn with an interactive media player code editor, learn how to code, that is, go check that out. We have a Scrimba affiliate link in the show description and on htmlallthethings.com inside of the show notes. And last but not least, feel free to leave a comment or a review on the platform you are listening to this on. And this outro will sign us off.
You've been listening to HTML All the Things Podcast. Web development, web design, and small business. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. And we hope you appreciate that we talk to you like human beings. And we hope you had some fun. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit us up on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon at HTML All the Things. And on Twitter at HTML Everything. Until next time, this is HTML All the Things. Signing off.